Hi, everybody. This is Doug with Emotional Affair Journey, and welcome to another one of our group coaching sessions, which are part of the Affair Recovery Movement. And I'm here this evening with Linda.
Hi, how are you?
Doing well. Sarah P.
Hi.
And Melissa Orloff. And Melissa is a marriage consultant who specializes in working with couples impacted by adult ADHD. And these couples are impacted by emotional and or physical affairs more frequently than couples not impacted by ADHD. And Melissa has both professional and personal experience with how to recover from affairs. And she's helped many couples working to recover, and both she and her husband have had affairs, so she has firsthand experience and empathy. And she is happy to report that she and her husband are a success story, and they have not only repaired the relationship but made it better than it was before. And her website, which some of you may have heard, I was on yesterday, and it's a very good website. It's www.adhdmarriage.com. Melissa, welcome, and again, we appreciate it very much that you've taken the time to talk with us
Thanks.
This evening.
I'm delighted to be talking with you.
Awesome. And what part of the country are you calling from?
I'm coming from Boston.
Oh, okay. All right, then. Winter or summer there yet? It seems like it changes every day.
Today, it's 85 and steamy. So summer for sure,
but
later in the week, I think it goes back to something more resembling winter.
Foot of snow, all right. Well, listen, Sarah, once again, we'll be running the show this evening. So without further ado, Sarah, the floor is all yours.
Thank you, Doug. So first off, I would like to thank everybody for taking the time out of your busy schedules to be here. And I hope that you're all able to find our time together today, both validating and healing for your own situations. So several years ago, I started to notice a connection between attention deficit disorder and infidelity. I noticed the connection, whether or not the ADD was of the hyperactive type or the inattentive type. So when I actually found Melissa's blog, a huge light bulb went on. And Melissa demonstrated through her writing and continues to demonstrate that not only was there a connection, but people with ADHD seem to have a higher incidence of infidelity. And Melissa, I am a huge fan of your work, and I would like to thank you for coming here to speak with us today. So if you don't mind, let's jump in.
That'd be great.
Okay. So, Melissa, do you have any takeaways about infidelity in your own experience and in terms of couples that you work with that you actually wanted to share with us?
Well, a number of them, actually. And, of course, it's always a little scary to go on and admit that you yourself had an affair when you're talking about recovering from it. But in any event, we both did. I guess the overarching idea that I'd like to share with people is that these experiences are incredibly traumatic on both sides of the situation, and not everybody can recover, but many can. And so what I'm hoping is that by sharing both the work that I do with couples who've experienced this and also some of my own work, that I can, in fact, give people some ideas and hopefully some hope. And ADHD is a factor, or can be a factor, in terms of increasing the likelihood of an affair. So one of the things I hope to do is highlight a little bit of what might be happening and whether ADHD might possibly be a factor for those who don't know, because the vast majority of adult ADHD is still undiagnosed. So lots of times it can contribute to issues, but not be known that it's there.
Okay, excellent. And so as we had been emailing back and forth, the phrase ADHD is thrown around a lot in the society. For example, if somebody normally remembers appointments and then they're late, they might say, oh my gosh, my ADHD is kicking in. So what exactly is ADHD? Did you want to explain that to us?
Sure. One of my least favorite expressions that's common in the high school campuses these days is, oh, that's so ADHD, when somebody forgets something. It really is diminishing. ADHD is actually a diagnosable issue that has to do with the biochemistry of the brain. So it has to do with low levels of certain neurotransmitters and how your reward system and attention system works in the brain. So about 5% of adults have that, which is still millions of people, but it is not 80% of people who have diagnosable ADHD. Now, having said that, there are a lot of people, maybe close to 20% of the population, that's what's called subclinical, and that means that they have some of the characteristics of ADHD, but not all of them. So there's enough... you know, there are enough people out there that it's a big deal. And it's characterized by the number one symptom is chronic distractibility. This isn't your everyday, I forget something or I get distracted once in a while. This is distractibility, which is a key component of how you do or don't do things in your life. And 98% of people who have ADHD say that chronic distractibility is something that is often an issue for them. Other things that are an issue for people who have ADHD are things like difficulty managing their time. They're frequently late, or they mostly underestimate how long it's going to take them to do something. They have difficulty engaging with or completing tasks. They tend to live very much in the present moment, so they're not very good planners often, and they are often not very good at remembering things. Now, these characteristics, not everybody who has ADHD has all of these characteristics, and there are more, but these are some of the major ones for adults. But they have many of them, and in fact, the criteria, which you can look up online for if you're concerned about maybe having ADHD, there's a lot of information online about what those criteria are, as well as at my website. But what it means, essentially, is that for couples, things like chronic distractibility end up being a problem.
Mm-hmm. And that actually gets into why ADHD can actually be so damaging to relationships. Would you like to speak more about that point?
Yeah, absolutely. So the damage comes in a bunch of different ways, but a lot of it has to do with misinterpreting how ADHD symptoms, you know, what they are and what they mean. So I'll give you an example. Distractibility, as I said, is the top adult. Even if you have hyperactivity, you know, distractibility is likely still something that you are dealing with. And so a person who has ADHD their attention is drawn to whatever is most immediate, and so whatever comes at them. Their brains don't filter very well, so it could be a dog barking, it could be an important email, it could be their partner, it could be the dishwasher, it could be something that is bothering them, it could be how their shirt feels. I mean, it could be anything. And all of those things sort of come in at a similar level of intensity often. And so the partner is just one of those things. And the net result is that they're so easily distracted lots of times, they tend not to pay a whole lot of attention to their partner. People with ADHD are also often very sort of internally focused, and I don't mean self-centered. I just mean they're in their own mind trying to manage this very active brain, very happy to be doing so, and so they're often not as engaged with people around them as they could be. So the net result for the non-ADHD or other ADHD partner is that they end up feeling alone. They feel as if their partner doesn't love them because they're not being paid attention to. Now, that's a misinterpretation because the partner probably does love them, but what's happening is there's this distractibility symptom, which many people don't know about, and so they don't know it's a symptom. They know the distraction is there. And so you can either say, well, my partner doesn't love me, and then get angry about that and try to, you know, get your partner's attention in intrusive ways, which don't tend to work because of the ADHD. Mm-hmm. Or you can say, hey, this is a symptom of ADHD. The symptom needs to be managed better. And obviously one of those is better for the relationship than the other.
Right.
And there are all these things that go on around the symptoms that are very negative for the relationship.
And that brings us into the point of asking about how ADHD is damaging to relationships. Can you give us some very specific examples that you've seen?
Well, so that's one of them, this sense that my partner doesn't care about me, and that comes across in a bunch of different ways. One of the things that's difficult for adults who have ADHD is to complete projects that they've promised. My husband used to do this all the time. He's better now. We've got systems in place. But before we knew about the ADHD, I'd say, would you do X? And he'd say, sure, no problem. And he would mean it. I mean, he genuinely intended to do it. And then he would either not schedule it, or he would forget about it, or he would get distracted from it, or something that had to do with his ADHD, and it wouldn't be done. And so then I'd say to him, well, did you do X? And he'd say, oh, no, wait, okay. And he'd say, I'll do it. And then he'd forget about it again. And then I'd start to get on his case and say, well, you know, how come you haven't done X? Why can't you remember X? Because, of course, I didn't know, right? So so you get into this war. And the long-term effect of this war is that you lose a sense of trust in your partner. And so, you know, your partner doesn't follow through. As I used to call my husband, very consistently inconsistent. It also raises the stress levels in the relationship, because obviously if you don't know if your partner's actually going to follow through on something that's important, you sort of have to keep your eye on it. And then that leads not only to stress, but it also leads to the sort of natural response to that is to take over and start doing that stuff yourself. It is easier if you're an organized person to do the task than to ask a partner who's a disorganized partner to do the task, and then have them continually forget and set you and your own, you know, resulting things back. So that then starts to hurt the relationship quite greatly in what I call the parent-child dynamic. The one person starts to take control and the other backs away and becomes more and more diminished in the relationship. And so that is very hurtful to the relationship. It's really hard on how you interact with each other, whether you think of each other as friends, whether or not you want to have sex with your partner. And it's incredibly diminishing to the ADHD partner, who just, you know, starts to feel, in my husband's case, really emasculated by the situation.
Right. So you've described pretty much the wrong response to ADHD, which is often it creates this parent-child dynamic and thus harms the relationship. So this is a little bit expanding on the original question that I had about how it harms relationships, but you want to talk about things to break that parent-child dynamic? Is there anything that you've seen to help break that dynamic so that
So first of all, you have to be aware of it, right? And so the more organized partner has to understand that this is not actually helpful. You go into it thinking that it's going to be helpful, right? Because you say, well, if my partner can't do it, I'll do it. It's just easier. But what ends up happening is you get too much stuff on your plate, and you end up feeling quite angry and resentful. And then you start to pursue your partner and say, you know, this is not fair. And, you know, so there's a lot of anger that builds up. So the first thing you have to do is you have to recognize that parenting behaviors and taking control of a relationship or of the tasks and stuff is not the direction to go in. And, of course, the first question that's asked is, well, but if my partner isn't going to follow through, how can I not take control, right? The
right.
obvious thing is to take control. So this is part of how you address this. Once you've identified parent-child and how destructive it is, and it is always destructive, then the ADHD partner's role in this is to optimize their treatment for ADHD. First, they have to know that they have it. And secondly, then they need to optimize their treatment. And I talk about this in my book and also at my website and in my seminar that I give for couples on this topic, that optimizing ADHD treatment is not just about taking meds. It's about all the things you can do to physiologically change how your brain functions, and meds is only one of those. There are others that are non-medicinal. And then it's
so behavioral.
Behavioral mm-hmm. things, and also some nutritional diet things, and et cetera. So there are a bunch. And then and sleep, for example. And then there are behavioral, like the left leg one is the physiological changes, and then leg two is the behavioral changes, where you actually attack, okay, so I've got this disorganized brain. You accept that there are issues that come with ADHD. What are the known ways to help people with ADHD improve their consistency and their dependability and their ability to perform? And there are lots of those. in that realm, and they need to be, you know, the ones that are appropriate for that person or that person can implement need to be implemented. And then there's a third leg, which is how you interact. Mm-hmm. So in that thing where I was talking about distractibility and, you know, or chores, let's say, not mm-hmm. getting done and pursuing, instead of doing that, you have a different reaction, which in this case would be looking for ways to get the chores assigned based on strengths and an acknowledgement, you know, in a realistic way, and an acknowledgement of the fact that it's really hard for somebody with ADHD to do stuff that they have zero interest in. So how can you use that? How can you use structures and stuff? So there are lots of different ways to manage ADHD.
Excellent. So my understanding is that you did not know about your husband's ADHD prior to the affair. So can you tell us about how his ADHD contributed to the affair first? Would you like to talk about that?
Well, so I can't remember. I was the first one of us to have an affair. And for me, mm-hmm. It was definitely related to the ADHD, actually to my responses and misinterpretation of the ADHD. So I'm pretty sure we didn't know about the ADHD at that point. And it was I was feeling so miserable and so alone and so unloved by the fact that he just simply wasn't paying attention to me. And we had gotten into these angry back and forth or whatever, that eventually I went out and sought solace with an ex-boyfriend. So the ADHD definitely played a role there. For my husband, it played a different kind of role. Again, it was the environment of our relationship that was so difficult for him, and it was his being in that childlike role. And my being in this, you know, sort of powerful, I'm trying to make you do stuff, negative taskmaster role that I had taken on to try to compensate or force him to deal with what turned out to be these ADHD symptoms. And he just, you know, he just needed somebody. He needed to feel loved as well. So it came, you know, we both had felt very unloved in the relationship, and that was a direct outcome of our personal experiences with the symptoms and also the responses to the symptoms. I mean, one of the things I need to make clear is that, ADHD is in the relationship, but it is not just the ADHD partner's issue. It encourages specific kinds of behaviors in non-ADHD partners that contribute to the problems as well. So it's always both people's issue. It did very much play a role.
So when you say, now let's talk just a little bit more about ADHD being both a person's issue. So the non-ADHD spouse needs to step up to the plate, basically, and partner with the ADHD spouse rather than being reactive. Is that what you would say that they need to do, or what's the general mindset?
Well, the tendency is to say, that partner's done a lot of bad stuff. That partner has ADHD. That partner never pays attention. That partner doesn't complete his or her tasks. That partner is untrustworthy, blah, blah, blah. So it's always pointed towards, from the non-ADD perspective, it's always pointed towards the obvious struggle that mm-hmm. a person who has unmanaged or untreated ADHD often has. Not everybody does, but lots of people do. Most do. Mm-hmm. And so it's easy to blame. But when you blame your partner, you miss the fact that, well, yeah, but in that distractibility or in that chore thing, you know, one of the issues in the chore thing that is creating all this anger is not just that the ADHD partner doesn't have a structure in place yet to successfully do the chores, but also that your response was to take them all on yourself and become a martyr instead of, you know, working constructively to figure out how to do it. Now, it's completely understandable, again, why that happened, because if you don't know about the ADHD, you can't figure out how to make it happen because your partner says, I'll do it, and then they don't. But the reality is, once you do know about the ADHD, it's quite clear that both partners are playing a role and that the responses that both partners have are really important for changing the dynamic and making it healthy again.
Okay, great. Now, what did your husband do? This is back to the affair. What did your husband do that was helpful after the affair to help you recover?
Well, so My observation, not only in the, what happened for us, but also in the scientific literature as well as in the in what I observe with the couples that I work with, is that the recovery, the start of the recovery process in particular, is very complicated. And part of the reason is that a huge number of these affairs, once they are discovered, don't end right away. And so they go underground. And there's good reason for this. The, you know, having been on both sides of this, being in an affair is extremely stimulating. And, you know, you seek what you want and you find it in the affair partner, and it's hard to give it up. And that's hard for people who've been hurt by having a partner who has an affair to hear, and it's also hard to hear that lots of these things continue on underground. And that was the case in our situation as well. You know, my husband went underground. And then it, of course, always resurfaces because the partner who has been cheated on is on high alert, and eventually it there's some mistake or something that happens, and it comes out again, that the affair is going on, which is intensely painful. And in fact, that is the thing that hurts the trust and the healing process more than finding out about the affair in the first place. Because you say, if your partner said, okay, I'm not going to do this anymore, and then they actually didn't, that'd be a lot easier than they say, I'm not going to do this anymore, and then they lied to you, your face, again, you know, after they knew how hurt you were. So one of the things that my husband did is, once this came back up as the second time around, was that he owned it. And this sounds bizarre, but there was a period of time where he was still sorting through how he was going to deal with this affair partner and his feelings about being in the affair. But bringing it above ground was really helpful, because at that point it gives me the power to be able to say, how do I want to handle this? Do I want to continue to live in the same house with him? Do I want to have sex with him? Do I want to move out? Do I want to ask him to move out? How do we handle it with the kids? And furthermore, I can trust that I'm privy to what's going on, which is critical. So that's one of the things that was very helpful. Once he decided, and he, by the way, also appreciated my ability to say, I know you need to work through this, and I don't want you to be committing to me forever again until you know for sure you're ready and you're satisfied that this is genuinely where you want to be. So he appreciated that as well. And trust me, it was not easy to live during this time, but we did.
So I had a follow-up question on that, because a lot of our subscribers at one time or another have found themselves or currently find themselves in a place where the wayward spouse is actually undecided. And like your husband, he might be in the house, it might be above ground, but that person still has not weaned from the affair partner. How long did it take for that process to conclude for you two? And what do you think was the thing that actually made him wake up in the end?
6 months is what it took. And I had actually set, though I did not talk to him about this, but part of my being able to live through this period is I did set in my own mind a deadline. And I figured if he was on the fence for longer than X amount of time, and he still couldn't make up his mind, then probably it meant that we shouldn't be together. So I did have a period of time in my mind whereby if he was still engaged with her, the relationship would have been over. He beat that. I was smart enough, having been through this before, to know that it's not a month. That's not enough time. You have to give 6, 9, 12 months for somebody to work through this. It's very hard to work through it because all of the fears, particularly when you've had these really negative history of really negative interactions for a long period of time, the big fear that the affair partner is very happy to reinforce is, you know, the changes that you're seeing in your partner right now, the good communications that you are finally having, your ability to talk about all this stuff is just short-term effort to get you back. And that's what the affair partner will say. And that is also the fear that the person who's having the affair has to come to grips with. So you have to be in this situation long enough so that that partner can start to gain confidence that, in fact, this isn't a temporary, you know, two-month effort, but, in fact, you really mean it and that you really are approaching the relationship from a new way and you really do want to attend to each other. And that that's a big deal. Now, it's hard to go through that. It's, you know, you listen to your partner and you have these conversations and your partner will hopefully share with you that they are on the fence. And that's really hard. But the reality is you're living with the impact of the affair forever. You know, it's always there in your relationship in its history, if not in the present moment. And so it, you know, it's better to be doing it above board and really talking about it. I don't want to be with my husband if he can't make up his mind.
Right. Now, was he actually, I don't know if you said this before, if I missed it, but was he actually at home this whole time? Or did he have periods where he would move in with the other person for a weekend?
He lived with her for 3 months, I think it was, full time, and visited me on the weekends, and the reason was so that we had a chance to talk face to face about what was going on. The good side of this, if there is a good side of it, is that you don't have much to lose by talking. You know, if you talk openly and you put it all out on the table, then you have a chance to assess, is this where I want to be or not? You know, what are our hopes and dreams? What are the things that are keeping us from just saying, forget it? You know, how important are they? What are our fears? All this stuff comes out on the table and clears the air. And then you can decide. So actually, there were lots of weekends when he was visiting me when he didn't really want to go away. And I said to him, until you know for sure you want to be back with me, I don't want you living here full time. I'm willing to have you come visit weekends and you know, talk to me when that seems right for both of us. But I don't want you living here and moving back in unless you know you want to be with me. And then, of course, he did move back in, and he still hadn't decided. He moved in because I had some health issues he wanted to help with, but even though I had told him, don't make that the reason. And so it went underground for a while and then came back, you know, then it wasn't. So then for the rest of the time when it was open and up above board, he was living with me. And, you know, again, it's really hard to have a husband who's going back and forth between two people. But that was his journey. And, you know, I had to go on my own journey, which was to explore whether I wanted to be with him anymore. And so sometimes having a break from him was actually helpful.
So when he was in the house again but still undecided, how did you emotionally cope with that kind of stress, knowing that he was going back and forth?
It was really hard. I handled it by doing things for me to help me remain strong, taking care of myself. It was intensely stressful, very anxiety-producing. You know, you can't disconnect yourself from it. I lost a good deal of weight because of the stress. But I also felt that I owed it to myself to make sure that this wasn't, you know, he was the father of my kids. We'd been together for a long time. We had clear reasons to struggle. Some of the reason he went off to this affair was my issue, and I was willing to own that.
What do you mean by that? What did you do? You take partial responsibility?
I don't take responsibility for his decision to have an affair versus make some other, you know, go to counseling or something like that. But I do take responsibility, partial responsibility, for engaging with him in ways that were not as respectful as they should have been, and making an environment in which things were quite, you know, negative for him sometimes. This is the ADHD thing, you know, picking on him because he wasn't doing what he had promised. Of course, he's feeling pretty ambivalent about me, and I don't know why at the time, so this inflamed things. So, because the affair went on for a while before I figured it out. This is it's very complicated, and I was willing to say, you know, ask myself, do I want to continue this relationship or not? So, having him there was stressful. There's no doubt about it. I can't can't deny that. So you're always in control, right? If at any time I said, this is too much stress, I could have just said to him, you know what, this isn't working for me, you need to move out. And he would have done that, given, you know, the situation, and he would probably have moved in with her. But at one point he said to me, do you want me to move in with her? And I said, well, do you want to move in back in with her? And he said, no, I don't. I will only move in with her at this point if you ask me to. You know, I'm still working through all of this, but I don't wish to be with her.
So he really was in limbo for a while. Mm-hmm. And what do you think, this is the million-dollar question, what ended that limbo for him? Can you identify a turning point, and can you identify what happened either psychologically or externally that caused that turning point?
So there is this, his life was very stressful as well. This was not easy for him either. And he was actually quite unhappy. And it got to a point where he was happier being with me than he was being with her. And so even though so this is an issue with ADHD, there's some addictive tendencies sometimes with people with ADHD. So he had to convince, you know, he had to sort of understand some of his attraction to her. But he just started to, over time, gain more confidence in the fact that we could, in fact, have a good, in fact, very good life together, that I wasn't going to become a mean witch again, which I haven't, and that he actually he wasn't as interested in this person as he thought he was. And so even though he was on the fence, a lot of the reason he was on the fence was twofold. One, he felt guilty for having, as he said, put her through this and hurt her, which is hilarious because, of course, he's hurting me at the same time. But, you know, that's not the way you think when you go out and do these things. And I get that because of what I do
right.
for a living.
And she also made a choice as an adult to engage with a married man. I assume that she knew he was married.
Oh, yeah, she knew he was married, and she didn't care, and she worked pretty hard to get him unmarried so that he would come and be with her full time. Lots of people make that choice, and it's not a great one, but that's just what you have to deal with. So it was not only did he gain confidence in me, but he also realized that there were a lot of bad things that would happen if he was no longer with me, and that they would not be offset by the good things that would be with her. He essentially just decided it wasn't the right relationship for her, for him. But, you know, the guilt was played an issue, and this lack of decisiveness, his fear, he overcame, among other things, his fear that I would regress in some way that would be painful for him. And so that takes time.
Yeah, right. So this brings us to our next question. Is it possible for a person to have an affair while still loving his or her spouse? It sounded like this was the case, that he was in love with two people. And is that possible?
It is possible. He used to say to me, and at first it drove me crazy, but I did come to understand what he said. And this, he said this actually before the affair even, as we were struggling as a couple. He'd say, you know, I love you, but I'm not in love with you. And affairs are all about infatuation. Right, they're high stimulation, high dopamine, high attention stimulation, which for somebody who's got ADHD in particular, anybody, this feels really good. But for somebody who's got ADHD, which is a low dopamine state normally, the intense dopamine and stimulation of an affair is particularly addictive. I did believe, he did love two people at the same time. What happened and what brought him back to our relationship is that as we got rid of the significant baggage that we had, we got rid of that, we stripped it off, we put our relationship where we wanted it to be, very actively and very thoughtfully, he fell back in love with me. And so he became interested in not just, being with me out of obligation and a sense of commitment from the marriage, but he actually genuinely fell back in love with me. and is excited to be with me and excited about how we are together as a couple and feels safe and warm and happy and all those things. So that's the turning point, I think. It's not that it was an obligation. And it's an interesting thing to think about. I mean, it's very, if you can say, you know, I love you, but I'm not in love with you, the task at hand is to fall back in love, to have that sense of, that sense of, I really want to be here, not just I have to be here.
And this is something that basically all of our subscribers have heard at one time or another, that their spouse feels like they may have fallen out of love or they may not have been in love in the first place because the neurochemical high, which is false, makes them feel as if they're in love with the other person. And so how did you two fall back in love with each other? Because I assume there had to be some falling in love on your part, too, because of the hurt.
Yeah, for sure. The answer, so that's sort of, it's complicated. First of all, we had been in love before, so that helped. There was a core of our relationship, which is actually very strong, even though we had totally mucked it up. So falling back in love means getting to know the characteristics and that you really care about in the other person, not only valuing them in yourself, but also, they're valuing you. So this is a challenge when there's been an affair and that kind of hurt, right? So the recovery from the hurt is part of that recovery is looking at your partner and saying, what do I love about my partner? What are the things that attract me to my partner? And that partner allowing those things to show. So one of the things that my husband fell in love with me, in part because he thought I was strong, he thought I was smart, he thought I was kind and empathetic and loving. And I remained strong. In fact, I got too strong. I remained smart, but I was not at all kind or empathetic or loving, right? Well, and that's part of the reason why he felt so diminished. And so what I did is I went back to myself, and it didn't matter whether it was going to be with my husband or as a single person or with somebody else, I needed to find that person again anyway. And so I went back and looked as my healing at who was I when I really loved myself? What characteristics did I have? What are my values? And how do I get back in touch with those values, you know, aside from the affair, right? How do I just bring myself back to who I was? And that was the process that I had been going through, and that was also why that was also then what attracted my husband back to me, is that as I became the person I truly am and moved the junk out of the way that had accumulated over the years, he fell back in love with me because that's who he fell in love with in the first place, right? And so, it remained attractive even more so because now we had two kids together and a long history and, you know, things to bind us beyond just the general attraction to our characteristics. And the same thing went in reverse. As he went to a place where he was less protected, he went into self-defense mode when I was on the attack in the struggle part of our relationship. And when he said, you know what, I have nothing to lose here, I'm going to completely open myself up, he told me things that I hadn't known ever in our, you know, relationship. We'd been married for more than 25 years. So he opened up to be the person that I had first met, which was caring and empathetic and more attentive because he now has the ADHD under control and was willing to give me his attention, which he wasn't when I was being mean to him, and had a reason to give me. I mean, this is how there's interplay, right? So if I just said it's all your problem and I was just mean to him still, then we still wouldn't have gotten, you know, it wouldn't have mattered, right? We wouldn't have gotten back together. So that's sort of, you know, it's a process of refinding yourself and stripping away the stuff that got in the way of the relationship and that contributed to the emotional climate in which an affair seems like a possible option.
That's a wonderful point, actually. And this is A little bit off topic of ADHD specifically, but can you say now that trust has been restored in your marriage?
That's a great question, actually. So I have to be honest about this and say that enough trust has been restored that we are very happy. The way that I handle this, so I am in a different place than I was when I got married, and that place, and so is my husband. But me in particular, I'm in a place where I understand that my husband is capable of having an affair. So I'm never going to be back to that original starry-eyed, you know, this will never happen to me place. That's just the reality of being in this spot. So I never discount. I think it's unlikely he's going to do so again. I don't see any indication in our relationship that would lead him that way. But I'm also aware of the fact that it's not impossible because I thought it was impossible before and it wasn't impossible then, so why should I change that opinion, right? So the way that I handle that is twofold. First of all, I do get triggered sometimes, particularly when he travels to the city where his affair partner still lives, and I feel anxiety about that. And he is extremely understanding about that anxiety, and he is very supportive of me, and if I feel it, I just contact him. And say I'm feeling really anxious, and he reassures me, and he might reassure me with words. He might show me where he is with his video camera. He might give me, you know, full access to his schedule. He's put on his phone a tracking thing so I know where he is. So he's done a lot of stuff to say, I really care about you. I know that you can feel anxious. You deserve this kind of support. And I'm going to help you with this anxiety. And over time, that anxiety is diminishing. But he's very responsive to it. So that's really, really helpful. But the reality is, you know, that anxiety makes me feel sometimes like, oh, my God, can I trust him? And
right.
And so I just have to live with that and understand that anxiety and reality are not the same. But if it turns out at some point that he does decide to have another affair, I also have concluded that that would be it for us, that would be more than I could handle. And so that gives me a sense of control as well, and he's aware of that as well. So he knows that if he makes that decision again, he knows what the decision is that he's really making is that we won't stay together. So you know, there are a lot of different things. It's a combination of empowering myself to understand my anxiety and address it, his supporting me in addressing that, and also empowering myself to say, you know, I still ultimately am in control of this in the future. If at any time this relationship doesn't satisfy me, I know what I can do about that. So that is enough trust, and over, you know, time strengthens those feelings of trust. As you get further and further away from the end, the actual end of the affair, it becomes more and more obvious that there is a great deal of strength in the relationship and that it's lasting. You know, that's the fear, of course, for either party. So he has the same thing. You know, he's seeing more every day, every month, every year. He sees, oh, she's not going to go back and be this mean person. And so I made the right choice.
Well, so it's actually okay, I'm hearing, to live in an ambivalent situation because some feel like, okay, if we're going to recover, I have to trust him 100%. But that's not true. Isn't trust a journey? And you can live in that ambivalence and still have a good marriage without feeling guilty. Is that correct?
Yeah. So I think every person has to decide this for themselves. So I'm okay with a certain level of ambivalence. If I was really concerned about it, you know, that would be a problem. But there are no indications to me that anything is going on right now that shouldn't be. And I do actually watch out for it at this juncture. And so I live with my anxiety with a sense of reality, and that's okay for me. It might not be okay for everybody. And I will say that my husband's response to me, I mean, he's very loving. He's very willing to talk about anything. He is willing to help me when I feel bad or down, even if it's related to the affair thing. He's not at all defensive about it. His opinion is, you know, yeah, I hurt you and you deserve my support. If he weren't like that, if he were defensive, if he were hiding things, you know, if he weren't willing to say, yeah, sure, you want to see what's on my phone and whatever, yeah, sure, you can do that, no problem, and let me show you around even. Then it would be harder to live with that ambiguity. So I think a lot of it depends, again, on the interplay between the partners. My partner's doing everything he can to show me that he knows he has to earn my trust and that he's willing to do it.
Right. That's the key. Mm-hmm. So you really are a success story in this sense.
Yeah, absolutely. No, we are. And not only that, but a lot of the stuff that was the original underlying issues that have to do with ADHD and the non-ADHD responses and all that, that's all been put to bed. That's just gone at this juncture. We are completely accepting of each other. I mean, he said the other day, you know me better than anybody in the world, and it's true, and part of that is also that I accept him. And, you know, we know each other inside and out, and neither one of us is perfect, and we're aware of it, and we love each other anyway.
Right. And giving people that type of acceptance is a very powerful thing for a relationship.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, I know that we wanted to save a little bit of time for reader questions, and Doug is actually in charge of those. So, Doug?
Yes, ma'am. Yeah, we got a lot of questions that were sent in. Some of them came in here just recently, and for those people that did send in questions, thank you very much. Some of them were quite lengthy, so I'm kind of cutting them down a little bit for sake of time, so I apologize for that, but hopefully you understand. So anyway, this first question is from a gentleman who is actually newly diagnosed within the last 2 years of being ADHD, and mentions that he was never really compliant in taking his medication that was prescribed, and you know, now kind of after doing some research and everything, realizes how much the ADHD had affected his marriage in the past. So he's got several questions, and I'll just kind of throw these out to you real quick. First one, what correlations have you found between ADHD and addiction? And in his case, I guess specifically gambling addiction or compulsive gambling.
Yeah, so there is a correlation, and I don't have the exact statistics on it, but addictive tendencies are very real for people who have ADHD, and you should talk with the person who is your therapist around the ADHD issues about the gambling issues as well. There may be, for example, a 12-step program that can help you. 12-step programs tend to be very helpful for people with ADHD because they provide a structure and support. So one of the critical areas for dealing with ADHD is creating these external structures that help you overcome some of the chaos and addictive stuff. But it is very much related.
Okay, great. Now, why does the ADHD person not see the consequences like others that don't have ADHD would?
Because this is actually a wiring issue. So the research suggests that people with ADHD are not particularly good at self-assessment. They also aren't very good at they have the executive function issues often that don't allow them to project into the future what the consequences are of any potential action that they might take. So that combination is a bad combination. It typically means that they're not particularly self-reflective, at least not until they create a structure in which they are forcing themselves to be so, and that they have trouble project, you know, they do things in the moment. Whatever feels good to them in the moment is what they focus on. And particularly if this person has addiction issues, that's going to be a particularly strong part of their ADHD, is that the reward systems and what feels good in the moment is the issue.
Mm-hmm. Does that kind of, his next question was about lying, and I was wondering if that kind of, same kind of explanation for that as far as why they tend to lie more.
No, actually, so this is a topic that I actually cover lying in my couples seminar because it's a big deal for a lot of couples who have ADHD. Part of what's going on there is that this is a go-to coping strategy for people who have ADHD because they are embarrassed by the fact that they cannot that they often fail at things that ought to, quote-unquote ought to, be easy for them in everybody else's eyes. So rather than try to say, you know, I don't know why I didn't do X, they just lie about it, or they fudge. I call it the fudge factor, or they omit. Another thing that's going on is that in the parent-child dynamic, over time, that parent figure is, you know, sort of constantly on the ADHD partner's case. And it is men in particular who have ADHD, there are physiological reasons why men don't like conflict. It's very hard for them physiologically to recover from conflict. And so putting themselves in a situation where they tell the truth and then their partner tells them what a bad person they are and how they should have been able to do it and all of that, is not what they want to do. So it feels much better in the present moment. Again, this is one of those, you know, looking into the future and the consequences, feels a whole lot better in the present moment to just lie and cover up. One of the things there are like 5 or 8 reasons why people with ADHD lie. Those are 2 of the biggies. And then, you know, recovering from that, if you want to call it that, learning to be open takes, among other things, a very safe environment in which to be open. So the non-ADD partners play a role here by making it safe and encouraged to be honest, even if they don't understand the logic flow or why something happened, because with honesty, then you can rebuild trust and you can both work together on what the issues are that are creating the conflict in the first place.
Okay. Very good. Are there any specific type of learning disabilities that you see most with people with ADHD?
Learning disabilities do go along. They have a higher incidence in people who have ADHD. Dyscalculia is one. Dyslexia is another. And there are some other issues that sometimes are confused with ADHD, such as processing issues and stuff. There is some very limited information in my book, my first book on that, but also you can look that up online in the literature.
Okay. All right. Let's see. This person was wondering if you can briefly discuss some strategies for the wayward male spouse who has ADHD, who wants to end the affair but needs some skills or wisdoms, maybe information pursuant to addiction, limerence, and moving on.
Mm-hmm. So there are a couple of different... So this is one of the...
A lot of things going on there.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on here. Well, so first of all, understand that part of the reason, and I don't know how long this affair has been going on, but so the time frame where sort of high dopamine state on an affair or any kind of new relationship is about 28 months, something like that. So I don't know how long this has been going on, but if it's been for a fairly short period of time, you're going to be struggling against the high dopamine level. There are a lot of different strategies. One is to be, if your partner knows about the affair but it's gone underground again, to open it back up. Another would be to get like a 12-step counseling or something. Another would be to get a buddy or somebody that can help you when you feel tempted to engage. And then there are certain things like get rid of the burner phone if you've got one, make it really hard to get in touch with this person if they're not an office mate or whatever and sort of in your face all the time. Telling that person, I mean, if you tell a person enough times that you don't want to have an affair with them anymore, even if you renege on that, after a while they're going to give up on you and say that you're too inconsistent for them, so they can help you as well. So there are a lot of different approaches to trying to cut something off. Understand it will take time, particularly if you have addiction issues, but try to set some structures in place. Again, thinking about the unstructured ADHD mind, try to set some addiction support and some structures in place keep you. I mean, I'll give you an idea. I have no idea whether Mike Pence had an affair or not, but, for example, one of his structures is he doesn't eat with women at the table unless there's somebody else there. That, you know, there are things like that that you can put in place.
Right. Okay. Let's see. Please bring up the issue of hypersexual behavior of the ADHD partner.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So ADHD, there's some proportion of the ADHD community that barbells in terms of interest in sex. There's a larger proportion of people at the end where they are extremely interested in sex, and there are there's also a larger proportion of people at the opposite end where they're less interested in sex. And I'm not sure I understand exactly what the promoters are of that, maybe low self-esteem on the lower end. But on the higher end, it probably has to do with reward and with making yourself, your brain feel good. I had one client one time, for example, who had a very sexually driven wife who wanted to have sex with him every single day. And he still wanted to have more sex than that. And the reason he told me was because when he felt stressed, even in the workplace or wherever, his way of dealing with that stress and calming himself back down was the stimulation and release of having sex. So I don't know whether this particular person can identify with that, whether this is a release for stress or whether this is a, you know, this just feels so great, I can't get away from it or whatever. But I would suggest seeing a sex counselor about this specifically and hopefully somebody who understands ADHD. So there is a guy, I don't know where you live, but there's a guy named Ari Tuckman who specializes in sex issues and ADHD issues. He might be able to help you. He certainly has a lot of videos and stuff about ADHD, and some of them have to do with sex. So that's a possibility. He's in Pennsylvania, so if you happen to be there, that's one option.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Let's see. Next question. Got several more, but I think we only have time for maybe a couple here. But is it possible that the person more inclined toward infidelity could actually be the neglected and worn-down partner of the adult with poorly managed ADHD rather than the adult with ADHD?
Well, yes, that was our situation. I was the first one to go, and I was the neglected partner. I just was so hopeless and so alone that I just couldn't resist the temptation to have somebody, anybody, love me. At least a little bit. So, absolutely, it is possible. Again, it doesn't make it a good choice. If I could take it back, knowing what I know now about what it feels like to find out your partner is having an affair, I would. I have said I will never, ever, ever do that to another human being again because it is so awful. And if you're tempted to have an affair because you're feeling really lonely, you should get a separation from your partner first. If you don't have ADHD, you should do that. And if you aren't willing to make that statement, because understand, someday your partner will figure it out, and that it's really hurtful. So rather than do that, take a stand, and get yourself moved out of the house, or ask your partner to leave, or however, whatever the situation is in your situation, but don't do that to your partner.
Excellent. Okay, I need one more here. How can indifference, lack of emotion, and pretty much ignoring someone until bedtime be at all construed as love? Does the ADHD mind really believe this, or does this describe a narcissistic person? What is the difference between narcissism and ADHD?
Okay, so I wrote a blog
just
answer
the last
on that.
One there.
I actually wrote a blog post on this, so go to my website and look up a blog post which says, which is titled, Donald Trump is a Narcissist, Here's Why Your ADHD Partner Probably Is Not. And that clearly delineates the difference between being a narcissist and not being a narcissist. That said, I hear this comment all the time because people think of narcissism as being self-centered. And as I said, a lot of people who have ADHD are internally focused, and some of them are self-centered as well. But usually that indifference, that inability to emotionally engage, there are a couple different things that could be going on. One is that this person could also have autism, which is marked by difficulties engaging with people emotionally. Another is that that the relationship between the two of you is so difficult that the that your partner is having difficulty engaging with you just because he or she is supposed to. In other words, my husband, when we were in our truly in the lowest possible point we could be at, would stay in his office and work rather than come to bed with me because he just couldn't deal with anything that I might say to him. And, you know, he just didn't want to be around me, so he escaped, essentially. So, you know, and in fact, he wasn't kind to me at that point either. But that didn't mean that he didn't love me or want to fix that. It did mean that we were in real big trouble and we needed help. I would urge you to try to differentiate between whether your partner is genuinely indifferent. For example, you never were in love, or you know, he is very overt about saying, "Look, I just really don't care about you anymore, and you know, I've really genuinely not only fallen out of love with you, but I don't love you anymore." Versus being in a self-protective stance, where he or she is finding it difficult to engage in a way that might support a loving relationship.
Okay, very good. I like that title of your blog post there. We'll have to get a link to that.
Well, you know, I do hear the narcissism claim a lot, even from therapists, and generally speaking, it's not true. It just shows a sort of lack of understanding of what's going on. That ADHD mind is really, really different from the non-ADHD mind, and it's wired differently, and so it behaves very differently. And the external symptoms of that or the external behaviors that come out are hard to interpret correctly. The good news is once you treat the ADHD fully, optimizing that treatment, not just saying, okay, I'll throw a few meds at it, once you treat it, those go away. My husband's a perfect case in point. There was a long period of time when I was sort of didn't feel like he saw me at all. And now it's just the opposite, where I know he sees me. He's fully engaged with me. You know, does he need time to go to work and all that? Yeah, of course. But it's a very healthy, full engaged relationship.
Awesome. Well, like Sarah said before, it does sound like you guys are a great success story, and we certainly appreciate you taking the time to share your story and all the great information with us. And I know we didn't get to all the questions, so I guess a question I have then is there a way that if people do have questions that they can either contact you or someplace that you have that could be made available for questions such as a forum or something like that, or
yeah,
what would you suggest?
So I've got a couple of different options for them. The forum I have a website which is extremely active and very large and has a ton of information about ADHD and relationships, as well as treatment of ADHD and how to optimize it and good resources and all sorts of stuff. So that's at www.adhdmarriage.com. There is a contact button there. So if you have a very specific question about your thing, I get those contact forms and I answer them. That's part of what I do for people. So feel free to contact me and also to explore. If you're new to the site, my recommendation is to start in my blog, in the start here and in the blog posts, rather than to go into the forum. The forum is very active, but it is also got a lot of people who are venting there. So you'll find support, but it could be difficult, very emotionally taxing as well. So I always warn people about that. But I'm happy to talk to people and answer questions.
Awesome. And then I also wanted to mention that you do have an intensive 8-week seminar that you offer for couples. And my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, that you have both a live version and then a recorded, and the live one's already started. Is that correct?
That's right. So I give it 3 times a year, and it is a terrific seminar. It's helped a whole lot of couples turn their relationship around and really understand what's going on. I give it in the fall and then in the first quarter and in the second quarter. So for somebody who's really, truly desperate, email me and I can hook you into the current course and you could listen through recordings. I record all the sessions and you could do it in a recorded format. Other than that, the best time to start would be next October.
All right. Or if they wanted to do the other self
or the self-study.
Study one, I'll send a link out for that.
Yeah. I mean, the self-study course is quite good. It is only the lectures, and the difference between the self-study and the live is that I answer questions in the live like I've been doing tonight. So if people have liked hearing me answer questions, they get that in the live course. They don't get it in the self-study. A lot of people, the reason I have the self-study is because a lot of people need it when I'm not giving it. And so
that's
a good way to do it.
That's kind of what I was leading to, because some people may be desperate and want to get something going right away. So
exactly.
But in any event, Melissa, thank you so much again, and we appreciate your time and all the information. And once again, anybody, please visit her site at ADHDmarriage.com. And we appreciate it. And Sarah, I appreciate your time and efforts as well. And
thank you.
For those listening, I will work on putting together the recording for this and send it out. And then members will see it on the coaching page in the members area. So with that, thank you so much for attending. And Melissa and Sarah, thanks again. And everybody have a great night.
Thank you. Thanks, Sarah.
Thank you. Have a great night.
All right. Bye.
All right. Bye. Bye-bye, everybody.